Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
Don't you just love it?
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Very superstitious.
Writings on the wall. Welcome back, everyone. 8:05, the time, hour number two here on Sports 56 Mornings, the Friday, June 5th, 2026 edition. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, Jay Ham with you, broadcasting live and local from the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure, they're getting you set for the summer. Check them out at 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. Beautiful day today. Right now, 66, going to get up to 88. But we do have rain in the forecast for the weekend and early next week. Again, not an all-day thing, but thunderstorms will be in the area after today. But take advantage of today as we get you set for the sports weekend. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, Jay Ham with you. We talked with John Varlas in our last segment coming up in hour number two. We'll talk with Joe DeLeon at 8:25. Hour three, we got 10 in a row, the game show that has swept the nation. And then at 9:25, Ed DeRosa will break down the Belmont Stakes for us. Hour two of the program brought to you by the great folks at James Gattis Jewelers, 4900 Poplar, between Mendenhall and St. Nick, on the web at gattisjewelers.com. Any occasion, a birthday, an anniversary, a graduation gift, and of course, if you're getting married, they are your bridal engagement and anniversary jeweler headquarters, open Monday through Friday, 10 to 5. Saturday 10 to 4 in the heart of East Memphis. They're closed on Sunday, by the way. It's James Gattis Jewelers, again, 4900 Poplar. And every Monday and Friday, they bring you the Memphis Sports Fact. Did you know? Veteran Sloan Stephens, the 2017 U.S. Open Women's Champion, has accepted a wild card spot into the inaugural Memphis Tennis Classic. That's a WTA 250 event to be played July 25th through August 2nd. At the Leftwich Tennis Center. So pro tennis coming back to Memphis. We'll have the tennis event at the end of July. Of course, the FedEx St. Jude Championship in early August. And before too long, it will be football season. Again, James Gattis Jewelers. Go visit James. Tell him you heard it here on Sports 56 Mornings. Okay, so we wrapped up with John talking about the Ed Scott announcement of the rev share. And it's a little confusing because people see stories about some of these power conference schools and how much money they have and what they're putting into their sports or athletic department. Remember that rev share is a set number that you can't go over that number. And the max is moving up, as Eli said, from 20 and a half the first year, which Memphis was about halfway there, to 21 and a half million for the 26-27 year or season. And Memphis, again, according to Dr. Ed Scott, is going to be able to go full rev share. Now, rev share does not include NIL money for athletes. And that's where the Kentuckys of the world and these other big-time power schools are able to give these players the amount of money that you read about. And that's why it's trying to be kind of hauled in a little bit. One of the reasons, with certainly other reasons why they want to have some kind of congressional help. And that's why that bill is out there, and we'll talk about that here in a second, and what SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti, the Big Ten commissioner, had to say about that bipartisan bill. But getting back to the Tigers and moving on now with full rev share, we heard, what, $9 million to the basketball program? Or is it 10? Nine, right?
Nine.
And then with football, we're looking at probably 10?
Seven for this year.
Seven for this year. So
he said he hopes it will get, or they hope to get it up to 10 for next year.
So 16, five and a half for every other sport. It doesn't sound like a lot, but that's actually pretty good money. So with that all said, and reading the story that John wrote, South Florida is full rev share in the American Conference. By the way, we'll have Commissioner Tim Pernetti, the American Conference Commissioner, on the show, I believe, next Wednesday. But it looks like Memphis and South Florida are the only two schools to go full rev share that we know of. And we already know what, I don't want to say pressure, but certainly Memphis expects to be
there at the end in all sports, playing for championships. And now when you hear about this money and what they're able to pay these athletes, then it even hammers that point home even more so, that they better win. And Dr. Scott made the point that it's not sustainable, this money, if we're not being successful. And this is not even talking about the...
Well, it's just not sustainable if they don't get into a power conference.
Into a power conference. But obviously winning and winning at a high level will help, doesn't guarantee, but will help with the possibility of being in position if and when there is that next series of changes around the country as far as different realignment in conferences and maybe a move to the power conference. Again, that's something that Coach Charles Huff was talking about, and he said 2028, which I don't think is in the cards, but certainly that's...
Dr. Hargrave said the same thing on this very program the other day.
Yeah, well, I don't see that happening. I mean, I don't see 2028. I think that's something that they're... It's a narrative that I think is being pushed forward, but I do believe that they feel that that could happen. I just don't see where there's going to be any changes before 2030. Maybe there's something, I don't know. Maybe something will happen. The point is that they're putting themselves into this position. But now, going full rev share, it's out there. These coaches have to produce, and they have to produce right away, and they have to win. Again, with Charles Huff, he's in his first year, but the expectations are still high. And I'm going to get to another publication, preseason publication, that has Memphis finishing very high. But for Penny Hardaway, you better have a big season this year. I mean, it's been laid out there for you that if you fail again, this like you did the past season, then it's going to be trouble. You want to get back to where he was a couple of years ago, winning conference championships, winning regular season titles, and going to the NCAA tournament. And they feel that they have the right people in place. They now have a general manager. He's put together a roster that he really loves, that Penny can get this team back to where they were.
Yeah, again, I mean, I talked a lot about this yesterday. You're certainly better. I think it's crazy the way they're distributing this money. I don't understand it at all. It makes no sense to me to give more money to basketball than football. But from the basketball side of things, he had the highest amount in the conference last year, and they got him an eighth place finish. And they decided to nearly double that. It just doesn't make sense to me. Again, unless there's a ton of NIL money on the football side about that's really increasing that payroll on that roster, this distribution of the revenue share money makes no sense to me.
And that's the age-old argument when it comes to Memphis, because a lot of schools in the same position as Memphis, meaning non-power conference schools, they've kind of made their bed, whether it be football or whether it be basketball. And it's very rare to have both those schools' big-time programs, football and men's basketball, playing at a high level. Memphis has done that at times, not annually, not consistently, but they have certainly done that. And they feel that they can do just that with that amount of money divvied up to both those programs. But, for example, South Florida, I'm not sure what they're doing with basketball, but they, I think, are making strides to become better overall with a basketball program. Football, the commitment is there. And if you come up short in both those sports, then what you're doing and how you're divvying up the money is not good enough. It's not. If you're not winning either one, it's not good enough. But a lot of schools have made their bed.
If you don't win basketball at $9 million, like that, $9 million for your basketball program, that, like that's more than the total rev share of most of the schools in the conference. But again, winning the conference in basketball, going to the NCAA tournament, where then you play teams who you're not spending as much money as, and then you end up losing, what the hell good did you get out of that? The idea of giving 33% of your rev share to football, again, it's just crazy to me. I like these schools. are giving 65, 70% to football. You're trying to get into a power conference. Football is the number one thing to get you into the power conference, and you're giving 33% of your rev share to football. That makes no sense. It just doesn't. Again, maybe they have some formula, and again, with NIL, maybe there's a bunch of NIL money out there, but that on the surface makes no sense.
Yeah, well, there's like I said, it's an age-old argument because it still is the sport that stirs the drink, football. But in Memphis, the love affair with basketball continues, although it was and it has not been shown at the box office the last couple of years. I mean, fans, even as diehard as they are not going to support a struggling program. And last year, it was a struggling program. It was downright bad. And Penny's the first to acknowledge that. But your point about football is well taken, because if you have a way, now certainly in basketball, it's very tough, even at nine, to keep up with the Joneses who are paying all the extra NIL money to go with the rev share ceiling. So they're going to get the bulk of the better players, and you would think it would be tough to make any kind of ground on them in the tournament. But getting to the tournament is paramount. Obviously, what comes with making the tournament and winning a game or two is very, very helpful. But in football right now, with the setup of 12 teams, you still have a spot. The group of six still has a spot. And I think that's your point. If Memphis can win the conference championship, could be the top-ranked group of six team, then you're in the 12-team playoff. That money is going to be a lot more than it is unless you make this unbelievable run in the NCAA tournament, and it seems like it's going to be hard to get back to that point unless you get to a power conference to be able to make a legitimate run. They weren't able to make a legitimate run even before rev share and NIL was a thing during the Penny era. So, yeah, I can understand what you're saying, and probably there is that frustration from the football fans, because it is the most important sport. But you can't have – football was solid, and then it faded last year. It wasn't a disastrous year by any stretch of the imagination, but was not as good as what it had been. Basketball, you expect to win that conference every single year no matter what. You probably expect to win it even if you have less money than a couple of schools, which they don't. But if they did, you would still expect them to win it because it's Memphis Tiger basketball. There's no history anywhere else in this conference with any of these schools with basketball. It's Memphis basketball. So you expect that to happen. Now, absolutely it better happen. But, yeah, I can understand why you would say you got to put more resources into football because that's the one that gets you over the top. We think. We don't know. We think it's just, oh, your football program's winning and they get to the playoff. Boy, you're going to be the team that they go after, the school they go after, if expansion happens again. Well, we don't know.
Again, it may not get you there, but they don't care. A great basketball program and a bad football program isn't going to get you there. They don't care about that. I mean, there's a reason back in the day Kansas was going to be left completely out when the whole Big 12, basketball isn't doing anything for them. It's about football. Everything's about football. And again, I mean, if you just look at it, again, I mean, there's a reason pretty much every other school is giving overwhelmingly more money to football than basketball, but it's just off a pure number standpoint, you're way more people to pay than you do in basketball. It's, again, getting into the college football playoff way more lucrative than getting into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
They certainly know more about it than I do. I don't get it. You put $5 million, nearly $5 million into it last year, got a horrendous return on your investment. Zero, got garbage on your investment and said, you know what? Let's double that investment then. I don't get that.
Okay. Couple of other notes involving the University of Memphis. Right now, Penny Hardaway has his 14 players all on campus. When I was gone, I saw that they finally got it rectified with Fred Smith, Cello Jackson, Parker Pounds all signed their letters of intent. So all 14 players on campus, they're working out. It's June 5th. That's certainly good news. Penny has said that he's going to keep that 15th scholarship in his pocket and possibly not use it. Now the chatter is that he may use it. I think Jason Munns wrote about, not specifically, but said that he thought that they would use that 15th roster spot. So there could be some news possibly happening there. And then as the months go on, we'll start to break down that team and come up with possible rotations and things of that nature. We don't know anything right now. But again, the roster may not be complete at this point. Also with Tigers football, another publication has come out. We talked about the deal with Athlon Sports, where Athlon had Memphis finishing second to Navy. And that, I thought, was a little bit of a surprise with Navy being picked to win it because of what they lost from their team. With Memphis, as I've said, until we see this team out on the field in August, until Charles Huff makes decisions which may not become public about who his starters are, and until we see him play that first game, which they're thrown right into the fire against UNLV on the road in Vegas, I just don't know what to expect. I think they're going to be competitive, and it wouldn't surprise me if they won it in this first year or had four losses. I don't know. I just don't know right now, and my guess is worthless at this point. But the preseason publications, they come out, and that's what they do. They basically guess. They talk to the coaches. They put their best minds at work, and we have another publication that picks Memphis second. This time it's Sporting News. So they also expect Memphis to land in the American Conference Championship. Now, to me, I think that would be quite the accomplishment in Charles Huff's first year, getting to the conference championship game. Would people be disappointed if they don't win it all? Sure. Especially if that American Conference team is going to be the representative in the playoffs. They represent the group of six. But I think it says an awful lot if he can get to the championship game in his first year.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic. Again, I mean, like all of the many of the other top contenders are also all with new coaches and everything else. So the opportunity is there, certainly, for Memphis to be able to get there and be in that conference championship game.
We will later on in the show get to the latest as far as what the powers, and when I say the powers, Tony Petitti and, of course, Greg Sankey from the SEC had to say yesterday as far as the bipartisan bill that's out there that will be Congress and their assistance in helping kind of lasso in everything that's happening in this wild, wild world of collegiate sports. And we'll talk about that. That'll be a topic that needs some time to really discuss. We'll do that. We got some more NBA to get to later on in the show as well. There is some good news for a former Memphis Tiger, Kendrick Davis. According to reports, he'll be the highest paid player or the second highest paid player in league history in the NBL and the highest paid import. Former Memphis Tiger going to be paid handsomely for the job he's doing playing in Australia, playing with Sydney. So congratulations to friend of the show, Kendrick Davis. When we come back, Joe DeLeon will join us. Also, one of our great sponsors, the great folks at Dinstals. Dinstals, they got their summer sizzler special going on. It's the chocolate pecan fudge. It's award-winning. It's the best fudge in America, made with the highest quality chocolate. That's the chocolate they make at Dinstals. They make it there at Pleasant View. That's where the factory is, and they've been making it for over 122 years. Forever they've been making this great chocolate and the candies that they have, and you can have them shipped anywhere in the country. You can also pick them up for your enjoyment at one of five locations, including a location in Collierville, Germantown, as I mentioned, Pleasant View, where the factory is. Laurelwood, that's in East Memphis, my neck of the woods, and downtown Memphis, five locations for Dinstals, fine candies and chocolates. Again, when we come back, Joe DeLeon. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
You have opinions?
I think it's over.
Of course you do.
I don't think it's that simple.
Everyone does.
I got all the answers.
Hit us up on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line at 360-8255.
back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
Diamonds are forever.
Woo! Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Time halfway home on this Friday edition of Sports 56 Mornings, getting you set for the sports weekend. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, Jay Hamm with you, about to be joined by Joe DeLeon. Got a busy third hour. We'll have 10 in a row, the game show that has swept the nation. Ed DeRosa will break down the Belmont Stakes for us as well. Well, we'll dive into this with Joe, but for people that missed it yesterday, there was a joint statement that was released from Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey. And basically, in a nutshell, I think this is what I came out of it with, Eli, and correct me if you think I'm wrong and you have a different opinion, but you have the bipartisan bill that's out there to protect College Sports Act. And this joint statement basically was, okay, we don't mind the intervention of Congress. In fact, we believe we need that, but we're not supporting this bill in this current form. There's a number of things that we disagree with. And this is after they had dialogue with Ted Cruz, who's part of this. So I don't know what specifically they disagree with. Was that said at all?
Well, the statement that they came out with is days ago. And we've talked to them.
Again, I've been gone. I've been on vacation.
They've met with the people and everything else. But everybody knows what it is. It's the pooling of media rights. It's the fact that they were targeted basically in the inability to do the super conference or in expand, and not necessarily they want to do that, but they don't like being targeted as told, like, you two are not allowed to do this. I mean, so, and there are other certain things in there that they believe, a lot of people believe, won't solve lawsuits and stuff like that. But the pooling of media rights, everybody knows those two don't want to do that.
Right.
And the whole thing of being targeted as the only two conferences, that's, nobody likes being targeted and told you two can't do something.
Especially Greg Sankey. Well, we'll get the opinion of Joe DeLeon, who joins us next.
Time now to talk about the college football weekend and look ahead with Joe DeLeon, co-host of the Ruffino and Joe Show, covering college football and the NFL draft at A to Z Sports. Here's Joe DeLeon with Greg and Eli.
Rocks! The Ruffino and Joe Show now on 247 Sports, by the way. He is Joe DeLeon. He joins us every Friday. You can follow him on Twitter at Joe DeLeon. Good morning, Joe.
How you guys doing?
Doing good. I'll feel a lot better when we're actually talking about games and breaking down breaking down what happened on Saturdays and all that good stuff. But we got a couple of months to get ready for that. And in the meantime, as we just were talking about, as you were on hold, the Protect College Sports Act. First of all, I'm sure you've read it, at least parts of it, and know what it's all about, as they're trying to help out as best they can collegiate sports. And I think there's some people that don't like intervention from the politics of the world, but it seems like the big power hitters don't mind, but they don't like this intact with what it says in the bill. There's things they like, there's things they don't like. What do you think about the bill, and do you think that they can come to a compromise?
I'm assuming that they can come to some sort of a compromise, but I was listening to you guys talk about, you know, why was the SEC and the Big Ten upset. The way that it was really easy for me to read into that is that the SEC and the Big Ten have prided themselves on being the leading voices in college athletics, and they've done a lot of good things. They've made a lot of changes that have been very self-serving, especially with the fact that they control the destiny of the college football playoff. And I think that, as Eli, as you pointed out, the fact that a lot of the language in here was targeted at the SEC and the Big Ten, there were things put in there in place to prevent them from just banding together and building their own super conference. There was language that was put in there regarding the pooling of media rights, which they don't have to opt into, but the presence of it is a direct shot at them. And I think that with all that happening, with all their efforts, they felt disrespected because they're trying to, just as much as everybody, they're trying to level out all of the chaos. So for this bill to be put together, to a degree without really their opinions as strongly as they could have been influencing it. It came off as, hey, we're trying to do things because you guys have caused all these problems and you're the ones who are the destructive ones, which isn't like exactly the case. I do feel like that they're probably going to come to some sort of a compromise. I feel as though the direct intention of Crows meeting with Sankey and with Petiti was in that effort to try and figure out, okay, how can we meet in the middle here? It seems like the only thing that they would solve a lot of this is if they just took the pooling of media rights out of it, because that's the one thing that they're the strongest against.
Yeah, and it feels like, a lot of people look at this bill, probably the SEC and the Big Ten, like this is the Cody Campbell bill. Like, so they're like, he's got a lot of influence in this. And so they're looking at this as like, no, like, as I said, like, y'all act like we're all the issue with college football. And so you're trying to like rein us in.
Well, and this is the other thing too, that has been brought up on social media. And if I'm correct, I believe Cody Campbell has a strong relationship with Ted Cruz,
yes,
as well. So to your point, that's why I think that naturally a lot of people are like, okay, how much of this is like really in the best interest of everybody? And how much of this is like really aggressively in the influence of Cody Campbell? That's the part with me. I don't have anything wrong with Cody Campbell. I've got no qualms with him, but it does feel like he has his fingers in a million things. And he just randomly came out of nowhere having this much say. And he's not an administrator. He's not a former coach. He was a former player. He played at Texas Tech. And I understand that he's got a passion and love for college football, but him being a mega booster and on the board at Texas Tech, I just don't know how that much like really truly qualifies him to be the leader of all this. Not just a voice of change, but to be the leader, the guy who's driving all of this change. That's where I think maybe the SEC and the Big Ten are rubbed the wrong way, especially because he's been very vocal and outward about the SEC and the Big Ten and almost directly taking shots at them.
Yeah, and so if you think like, okay, you've had your problems with us, you've taken shots, and now, again, because of the relationship and everything else, they look at it and go, okay, now you're basically, you're writing this bill. You've got a lot of influence on this bill that, again, directly targets us. They're going to, like, you're going to fight back. You're going to be backed into a corner. Like, no, we're not allowing this guy to continue to do this. Like I'm sure they look at it like the same thing. Like, who the hell is this guy to start trying to make the policy in college football?
Well, I think you guys are absolutely right. I think you hit it on the head with that influence with Cruz. And I didn't know about that relationship and all that. But I think what bothers people to some degree, maybe not around here because we're in SEC country, but is when did we get to that point? Now, of course, we had the power conference group of six sort of breakaway. And I know a lot of people don't like to use that terminology, but the fact of the matter is we got four power conferences. But then two of those conferences broke away again to become as powerful as they are. And I think people have a problem that there's two conferences that control everything. And while it shouldn't be probably even Steven, it should be a little bit more towards the even part than not, even though they're dominant sports-wise. I think that people have a tough time in wondering, like, why did we get to this point where there's so much inequality amongst these schools?
Well, and I think that the very kind of simple explanation on where the inequality came from was, and just decades-long, especially recent, success from many of the teams in those conferences and an aggressive push by the administrations and the alumni bases of those programs to set them up to succeed. And it's been the culmination of all of that. To a degree, the Big 12 and the ACC can't completely help that not all the teams in those conferences are as invested. Like the Big 10, if I were just to throw a loose number, probably like 80% of the teams are like really want their teams to at least be good and competitive. And then, you know, maybe 40% of them believe that they can compete for a national championship. I feel like 90% in the SEC and maybe 50% feel like that they can compete for a national championship in the SEC. And the same can't really be said for the Big 12 and the ACC. But the biggest problem that comes with all this, aside from how the history of the sport has moved, the ACC and the Big 12 signed over decision-making for the college football playoff over to the ACC, or over to the SEC and the
Big
10.
Which was foolish.
So they kind of, right, they made their own bet. That's the thing for me that I'm totally fine recognizing and agreeing, and actually I 100% believe that there should be more balance across the conferences. There should be more top teams.
Did we lose, Joe?
You see, in the Big
10. Oh, there it is. Okay.
Situation. They dug themselves into a hole. They gave up and relinquished power, and they can't come across as upset after doing that when they're the ones who
That's
just gave
point.
Up well, and said, you know, go ahead, you can do it.
Yeah, you're right. The power, I don't know why they did, but you're right.
Well, because they knew they had no leverage. I mean, the power is earned. It's by being really good and making the TV companies give you massive contracts that are way more than the other conferences. And that leads to Texas and Oklahoma wanting to leave the Big 12 to join the SEC. They didn't do that for the hell of it. They did it because there was a lot more money there. And that led to you got teams who wanted to leave the Pac-12 to go join the Big 10. Why? Because there was way more money there. That wasn't just accidentally given to those conferences. That's because the TV companies realize this is where the viewers are. This is where the success is. So this is all earned. And so once you've got that and once you've got the money and now you're stealing the teams, well, these other conferences, they have no leverage. So you could say the threat of idea of like, oh, what if the SEC and Big Ten just told us to get the hell out of here altogether? Like, we have to give them power because we don't have any leverage in any of this.
Okay, so Joe, with that said, and I agree with what Eli just said, what kind of literature could they change to make it, in your opinion, something that would be advantageous for the SEC and the Big Ten to sign off on?
I honestly really just think that this all comes down to the pooling of media rights. Again, while this is something that is optional where they don't have to be a part of, I think that the reason why they don't want that in there is that, one, the SEC and the Big Ten don't want to feel like they're the bad guys for constantly saying no to participating in pooling of media rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that they don't want a sudden flow of cash that goes into these other conferences that they're able to catch up really quickly. That's the real part with this as well. But I think that they want that removed. I think as long as that part is not put in there, there's nothing else in the Protect College Sports Act that is anything that they would have issue with. And everything that I've read, every time I read the statement, the text message statement from Petitti and Sankey yesterday, and then the one that was put out before the hearing on Wednesday, it seems like the pooling of media rights continues to be the one thing that they're the most against. And it sucks that this is the reality, that they're so against something that would help level the playing field. But that seems like that would be the only thing that needs to be removed. Across the board, everything else in there is important. The transfer portal rule, the 5-for-5 rule, the agents capping their commissions. There's just overall a lot of things that I think are best for saving college athletics that I don't think that Sankey or Petitti would have many qualms with. It was just the things that were so aggressively labeled to be attached to what the SEC and the Big Ten have done recently that they're, to what you brought up, Eli, the whole media rights deals that they have, where they've built their deals up so big that it's now setting up these situations where the other conferences want to be able to catch up to some degree.
Yeah.
And the only way for them to do that is if they pool their rights together.
And see, and the other thing, too, with this bill is that there are some of the things that are in there that people go, well, yeah, we need that, like the whole protection for the Olympic sports and all that type of stuff. However, those only happen if the media rights are pooled. Because a lot of those read, like, if the media rights are pooled, then this. Well, we know that the SEC and the Big Ten don't want to pool the media rights, so a lot of that stuff is not even going to be in there if they don't pool the media rights.
Right, right. And like, that's why I'm kind of conflicted on the concept of pooling media rights is, I think that from the other side of it, I understand why there is support. The one thing that was really interesting to me was that Pete Bavakwa...
I was just going to bring that up, Joe. I was just going to bring that up.
His voice on this, I think, is the most impactful and the most important, And I really respect him, not just because I'm a Notre Dame fan, but the fact that he's a former NBC executive, mm-hmm. I think really serves to how he's going to be able to provide insight and context to this whole thing. And he talked about how, one, he doesn't see that the pooling of media rights would generate enough more money for the SEC and the Big Ten that it would be worth it for them and for Notre Dame. And then, two, he also brought up how it would be incredibly difficult for potentially trying to negotiate those things and try to manage those relationships and, like, actually working that stuff out. Because what would have to happen is that if the SEC and the Big Ten were to pool and were to be a part of this, they would have to negotiate a different split. That was essentially what was put into the bill was, all right, well, pooling of media rights would be allowed. It's up to the SEC and the Big Ten and the other conferences to then participate in some sort of negotiation. That would be incredibly contentious and complicated. And I think that Bavakwa brought up some really good points that, in theory, it sounds really good for college athletics, but in reality, it's not going to be as simple as everybody's making it out to be because of all those complicated pieces that go into a media rights negotiation.
Mm. It was also scary, though, for him to say about the power conference and the breakaway. You talk about, like, making more money and revenue if there was those schools. And not that he was threatening to be a part of that, but it just having somebody say that of importance, it's like, oh, God, you know, here's that thing, even though there's no threat. But then, of course, he catches the stray from Brett Bielema. I'm sure you saw that comment. Bielema calling for Notre Dame to join a conference after those comments. Bielema saying, actually, it's pretty easy. Just go and join a conference. I don't see that happening. But, yeah, I thought what Bavakwa had to say was extremely important. And then as we've been talking about, Joe, on all our shows about the possibility one day of the breakaway, to have somebody of importance like Bavakwa, even though they're not part of a conference, to talk about that was kind of scary.
And I think that this is – I really like Brett Bielema, and I think that he's a great coach, and I've always supported him. But I always get a little annoyed when there's something as important as this, and people are just, like, taking it on a completely different tangent that's not really related and using it as a way to take a shot. So a lot of people were upset at Nick Saban and his comments during the hearing and talking about NIL, and everyone was saying, oh, of course Saban doesn't support NIL because he got to do it before it was legal. But the reality is, if you actually listen to his words, he wasn't speaking out against NIL. He was merely speaking about how the system needs a little bit more control. But this circumstance with Bavakwa, it's like, okay, Brett, man, that's not what the point was. The point was is he was trying to, if anything, explain that there is a looming problem of a potential Super League, and that is where these broadcast partners would ultimately probably want these things to go. It's the one thing that we need to remind ourselves at the end of the day is that the broadcast partners control a lot of things mm-hmm. in the future of the sport, and they control a lot of the voices in the expansion of the college football playoff, and all of those things. So I kind of just – I see what Bielema's saying and roll my eyes because it doesn't really have anything to do. Notre Dame joining a conference, if they join a conference, it would be for a Super League. It wouldn't be right now to just join the Big Ten because, oh, they felt like it.
Right.
I think we need to recognize it's more of a warning than it is him saying that it's a good idea.
And then he even said in the thing, like, he doesn't support that.
Right.
I just say that this is, if you want to talk about how to make the most money, this is like, could you imagine if you took the SEC, basically the Big Ten, you might even kick some of those out of there and you add Notre Dame in that mix, like the bidding war that you would get between ESPN and Fox to have the control of those, whatever, 40 teams or 30 teams and all of their games, my goodness, then you would absolutely – they would be making so much money, it'd be insane.
Yeah, but Bielema, friend of the show, by the way, he's a ball coach. He's a ball coach. He's Coach O Light. You know, he's not the only one to say things just kind of spur of the moment, just pop out of his mouth. But you're absolutely right. One thing does not equate to the other.
He coaches at Illinois, where he is coaching – He is overshadowed completely by Notre Dame his area.
Like that's a good point.
Notre Dame is a direct effect on Illinois and Brett Bielema.
Right.
They completely, in that part of the country, overshadow Illinois.
Joe, just about out of time, but I want to get your thoughts here. Different subject altogether. I saw that you tweeted out, and I was going, I just got back from vacation, but I saw all the big NFL trades that have happened since June 1st, and you're calling the trade of Myles Garrett to the Rams third biggest trade ever, possibly, in the NFL history?
I mean, I think that has to be up there. The only one that, like, legitimately, I think, tops this is the Herschel Walker trade from the Cowboys to the Vikings, just from the sheer volume of players and picks that went into it. But, man, if we're talking about star power, multiple big names that were involved, because Jared Verse is still a really good up-and-coming player, but the impact of an elite player, future Hall of Famer, the best pass rusher in the NFL, being moved to the team that was already the established favorite to win the Super Bowl, that's what makes this the biggest, one of the biggest trades of all time. The more I've sat on this and thought about it, I think it leans towards being at the top. It was so unexpected. I think that when you're making a move that big for a team that was in contention and there was a gap of separation between them and the next closest team to win the Super Bowl, that's what makes this gigantic. If it was a different pass rusher or a different team, I don't think it has that same level of discussion. But because it's the Rams and in Myles Garrett, that is what makes it so much more impactful.
Do you think it's bigger than the Matthew Stafford trade that they made when they gave up Goff or Stafford?
That was the other one that came to mind in consideration, and the reason why I think that it's bigger than that is because as good as Jared Goff is, he's a very solid starting quarterback. I feel like Jared Verse has a higher long-term ceiling than Jared Goff. It's kind of hard to compare the two because he's a quarterback compared to an edge rusher.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Stafford's really, really good, but I feel like Myles Garrett's a guaranteed Hall of Famer. I couldn't say that about Matthew Stafford before he won the Super Bowl that he won and winning the MVP that he won recently. Now he's on the trajectory to be a Hall of Famer, but Myles Garrett is a Hall of Famer. So I think that this just slightly edges it out for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly say, but my thing would be because Goff, I mean, the fact that Goff had already taken the Rams to a Super Bowl and you traded a guy who had taken a team to a Super Bowl, didn't win it, and you trade him rolling the dice of like, we don't believe he's good enough to actually win the Super Bowl, so we go get the guy who we think wins the Super Bowl, and then he comes in and wins that Super Bowl. Like, that is.
Well, that was more of a gamble, like a great, like one of the maybe biggest rolls of the dice. This isn't a gamble when you're getting Myles Garrett still in his prime.
The other thing, too, with the. Right, so that's kind of what I'm getting at here is all of those things, like narrative wise, I think that one had a lot more drama attached to it. Because it was really crazy. Like, oh, my God, we drafted this guy. We developed him. He was a leader for us. He took us to a Super Bowl and casted him aside and swapped him out. Stafford was a really good quarterback at the time, but he wasn't the number one quarterback in the NFL. That's why I think that there's just a slight difference is that Myles Garrett is clearly the best pass rusher in the NFL. He's broken records, and he will be a Hall of Famer. I don't think that there's any debate on that at this point for what he's done and accomplished. That part, to me, is what adds to it is that number one player, and also the time the Rams, even though they went to a Super Bowl, they weren't going into the next season they're absolutely the team to beat in the NFC. They're the team to beat in the NFL. That is exactly what's being said right now about this Rams team.
He is our college football and NFL draft insider. He's Joe DeLeon. He joins us every Friday. He's the host of the Ruffino and Joe Show on 247 Sports. Covers college football and the NFL draft for A to Z Sports. He does it all. He's Joe DeLeon. Follow him on Twitter at Joe DeLeon. Have a great week, Joe. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Folks, whether you're buying or selling, you always want to make sure you've got a great realtor on your side. Give Bubba Sandifer at Emmett Baird Realty a call at 901-319-0747. If you're trying to sell your home, one, if you want to just get out of it, get rid of it quickly, he will buy it as is for cash. And so you can get out quickly. But if you're looking to get top dollar for your home, go to Bubba. He'll list it. He'll get you that exposure, find you those serious buyers, get you top dollar for your home. But if you're looking to buy, he also can find those great homes, making sure you find the perfect home for you, for your family, the perfect fit. And he knows the market to make sure you're going to get that at a great price as well. So give Bubba Sander for a call for all your realty needs. 901-319-0747. Bubba Sander for it. Emmett Baird Realty.
You're listening to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk. Sports 56 at 98.5 FM.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gaddis Jewelers.
Genuine diamonds, baby.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everybody. We've got 10 in a row. The game show that has swept the nation comes your way. The top of the hour, not the top of the hour, but right after we come back from the top of the hour break, we'll open up hour three with 10 in a row. And then Ed DeRosa at 9:25. Got some other news to get to that we haven't touched on yet. We've touched on a number of things. Obviously, the NBA Finals resuming tonight with Game 2 in San Antonio. Knicks and Spurs. Knicks a 6.5-point underdog. So they are 6.5-point. Yep, dog against the Spurs. So the Spurs are expected to even that series. We'll see if it happens. 7:30 on ABC. Knicks winning game one, 105-95. Also, two fans were banned for life from attending an NBA game after attempting an in-game selfie with Wemby Wednesday. One was trying to get the selfie. I think one happened in the first half, a fan coming onto the court. Or were there two?
The fan came out of the court. The other guy, the other one, it was his accomplice, I guess they're calling it.
His accomplice.
And we did, by the way, did you see, Jay, that it was fans that were, that Jalen Brunson was going after?
Yeah.
Because it was weird because it was at the scorer's table, but it's those fans, it's like right the Grizzlies, the you table. Have seats that they sell now at the scorer's table. But yeah, that's what, and Scott Foster was what he was, kind of held him back there at the after the game ended to say, like, basically, dude, you don't want to do this. Like, this is not going to be smart. No. You won the game. Get that guy out of here. But they're investigating that, and we'll see if those fans get in trouble, too.
Exactly. So I don't know how many is involved there, but that could be.
Because that was weird, though. It was never addressed, really. And then finally, I don't know who was that first reported it yesterday. Finally, it was like, it was fans. They said it was about flopping that they were yelling at him about.
And after we got off, I saw that Chris Haynes was the first
that
did it.
That's right. Because he was on the Dan Patrick show. And he said, he even actually said, now, Dan, I've given it to you. Give me a chance. Give me 20 seconds so I could tweet it out there. Because, he was the first one, that's right, that had the actual story about what, because nobody knew what it was. And then he finally was like, it was fans there at that scores.
I still don't know how you stop those two guys that were banned for life. I still don't know how you stop them from going to a game down the road. They show up in Sacramento. They've already gotten their tickets somehow. It's not with their name.
Somebody said, who's to say that they can't go see the Kings and the Hornets in like 2048?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, what are they going to have their pictures up there?
Facial recognition. You don't need pictures. It's facial recognition.
It will be in play by then. Yes.
They try to walk in. They go, that's that guy's band. Yep.
They have that?
Yes.
When you walk into an arena, facial recognition? At the airport?
The ones that don't have it, they will soon.
I'd bet $1 million that these two guys down the road will find their way into a basketball game.
Wouldn't doubt that either, though.
I mean, I think they would, but I assume you guys are fine with a lifetime ban. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, screw you guys.
And as we said yesterday, I'm all fine with a firing of a lot of security personnel because it was horrendous.
What was it, like 11 seconds?
11 seconds.
Anything can happen in 11 seconds.
Yeah, but I'm the one who's always said that. I go, how are you stopping those dudes from running onto the court? You're not. You're just not stopping them. Now they're sitting right there, as you said. I mean, people are right there next. I'm not saying that they came from that area, but you got people right there next to the teams.
And even if you don't stop them from making the attempt, 11 seconds.
He ran the length of the floor. I mean, he ran the length of the floor.
So you got a 70-year-old woman trying to run him down. I mean, it's not happening. No. It's just like.
The NBA Finals. There is security everywhere.
Why are you having 70-year-old security, Greg?
People find their way. Have you been to the forum?
I know.
Those are ushers. Those are not security.
Okay. Well,
it's about the ushers.
People will find their way onto the field, onto the court. They will all onto the diamond. They will always be able to do it. They will always be able to do it. I'm sorry, the people that throw the paint on the – they're able to find their way.
They can find their way on the court. They should be able to find their way the length of the court and be on the court for 11 seconds before security gets to them.
I agree with that. I mean, I didn't know how far the guy ran. Again, I was out of the country. I just knew that the guy did a selfie with Wemby. I'm like, what?
He almost ran out of the country with you. He was on the court for so long.
All right, we got to take a break. Hour three on the way. Before we do so, tell you about Corky's. Corky's Ribs and Barbecue with four locations in the greater Memphis area. Poplar Avenue in Memphis, Poplar Avenue in Collierville, Germantown Parkway in Cordova, Goodman Road in Olive Branch. They've been serving up that delicious slow-smoke barbecue, all the fixings for over 40 years. Plus, you can go outside the barbecue family. They got an award-winning catfish plate, tamales, burgers, salads as well at Corky's. If you want an event catered, they will cater it for you. They've been doing that as long as they've been around for over 40 years. They'll start you out as low as $7.99 per person. Corky's, Corky's Ribs and Barbecue, open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week. You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Did you miss your favorite Sports 56 show?
No!
Check out the podcast, broken down hourly, at sports56whbq.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to like and subscribe. Never miss any Sports 56 show again with our podcasts available daily.